Hello and welcome back to Laundry Yard Work and Jesus. My name is Pastor Joe.
And I'm Pastor Josh.
And we are back for another week to talk about parenting and children and life and shenanigans and all the things in between.
All the things in between. And hopefully we'll laugh a little and hopefully you'll laugh with us.
Yeah, otherwise we'll cry.
We won't know. That's the other thing. That's
we won't know.
The good news
we'll just
this.
Anticipatory cry. And I broke him again. Fantastic. That's my goal. Mission accomplished. It's all downhill from here. So this week, we're going to be talking about some of the difficult areas of parenting, some of the things that we all have to do, but we don't necessarily enjoy. At least I hope we don't really enjoy. And that would be like discipline and rules and parenting each particular child and navigating through those different things. And so we thought it'd be fun if we just opened up and shared all some of the times or one of the times where we absolutely deserve to be punished growing up.
Yes, I think that would be great. You know, in my own little title for this episode, I titled it Just Stop It.
Oh, that's a great title. Yeah, that's the official title. I'm going to write that down.
Just Stop It. I feel like that just captures every parent's emotion at least 1,000 times in the parenthood process.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I'll go ahead and go first.
Yes, you go first.
I'll go first. So the worst I was ever punished, I'm not going to say what the punishment was. It was a severe punishment. I will say that. It was a severe punishment, and I deserve to be punished.
It was a punishment that fit the crime. Maybe.
Maybe. It was a lot of punishment, but it was a big crime. Way back when, parents listening to this, you probably will know this. You're probably of the same generation that I am or we are. But, you know, when I was growing up and I was like in second grade, kids could walk home from school by themselves. And that is what me and my brother did. So we had kids that would get on the bus and then go. And then there was like me and my brother and 100 of our classmates that would just get released into the wild. And teachers hoped that we found our way home. And so we'd form little groups. And I lived about a mile from the school, mile and a half.
Can I pause you?
You can absolutely pause me.
Can you imagine the Facebook posts if schools did that today?
Oh, my goodness.
Sorry.
They would be calling for people's heads. The principal just let the kids leave on their own? What?
Oh, yeah.
Like that was how most people got home when I was growing up.
Awesome. Anyway, continue.
So we were leaving home, and we were living on an army base on the time, so it was sort of safe, but it wasn't the safest base at the time. This was pre-9/11. You know, I was a second grader at the time, so you know, it was still a bit of an ordeal. So me and my brother, my younger brother, walked. So if I was in second grade or third grade, he was probably in kindergarten or first. So imagine basically a 7-year-old or 8-year-old walking home with a 5-year-old just expected to get home by themselves, which means we had to know where we lived and our address and all that and how to get there. So we were leaving and we were walking, and about a little ways afterward, we were passing a playground, and some of my classmates were like, hey, you want to come with us? We're going to take a shortcut. We live about the same area as you do. Why don't we take a shortcut? And I kind of resisted, but I wanted to be cool. These were some of the cool kids. And so I went along with it. And we went into the woods, and we started crossing a little stream and a ditch. And we were kind of walking. And it took a little bit of time. It felt like it was fun. We were having fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got out. And they're like, all right, shortcut's over. And we were like 100 feet from where we started. And so I'm like, well, that wasn't great. My little brain there is like, well, that's probably not great. We better get home. And so I grabbed my brother, and we took off, and we got home. And when I walked in, my mom was in the kitchen. I remember that. And my dad wasn't there. I'm like, oh, dad's not home yet. And she's like, oh, you guys are dead. You guys are 45 minutes late. And so he left to go find you. And he left to go to the school. And the school's like, no, we don't have them. We released them. We don't know where they are. We don't care. It's not our problem. And then he came home thinking we would be back, and we weren't back. And so he went back just driving the streets looking for us. But, of course, we were in the woods, so we weren't able to see us. And so she told us to just basically sit in the living room and beg for mercy when he gets home. And about 5 to 10 minutes later, he got home, and we begged. and we did not receive mercy. There was no mercy given. But now as a parent, I can imagine your kids are missing for an hour and you can't find them and nobody knows where they are. Like, I can see the error of my ways. But it was a bad time to be me.
I bet it was.
It was a real bad time to be me.
But you survived it.
I did survive it.
You did survive it. That's good. If there's any hope at all, survived it.
This is true. How about you, man?
So for me, the most trouble I ever remember getting in was fights with my brother. So my brother and I'm the older one, he's younger, but we're 20 months apart. So we just grew up pretty close, and I just remember these knockdown, drag-out fights from screaming at each other to him scratching me to swords being brought out.
Was
knives.
He a biter? My brother was a biter. That wasn't fair.
I don't remember that, but he was a climber, and so he'd jump off things and stuff. So it was all kinds of things. I was the fat kid. He was the skinny kid. It was a dynamic. But I remember at some point my dad decided the best way to discipline us for fighting was to sit us on the couch or a love seat, and we'd have to put our arms around each other. And every 5 minutes, we had to give each other a kiss and say, I love you. And that was one of the worst things could ever imagine, because we'd just been fighting. We're red-faced, angry, just furious with each other. And I remember we refused to do it. And this was like middle school.
I was about to say, are we talking like when you're like 6, 7, or are we talking like 15, 16?
Oh, no. These are little man children sitting on a love seat, holding each other and having to give each other kisses on the cheek. And I remember we refused because, we were man children.
Yeah.
And he looks at us and says, if you don't do it here, I will force you to do it at school on Monday. And my dad was the on-call janitor, so he was at school. He worked there.
Uh-huh.
And it was enough of a threat to where we just conceded, fine, we'll do this. And so that is my memory of just how we fought and my dad's creative ways of getting us. I don't even know if it stopped us from fighting. It just kind of humiliated us.
Just rammed. So I received pain for mine. You received shame for yours. All the shame. It's awesome.
It's fantastic. I mean,
that's not awesome. It scars us for life, but hey. But we're here. We survived it. We are functional adults.
We are.
So it must not have been the worst thing in the world.
It's a different time. Different day.
Very much different time and day. But one thing I really like about your punishment in particular, I'd rather talk about yours than mine.
That's fair.
Is how it was a specific punishment related to a specific crime that you and your brother were committing. Yes. It was a tailored, like, you did. I don't imagine that was your punishment for like when you back talked your mom.
No.
Like that was a specific punishment for a specific crime. And one of the things that we're going to talk about in our book. So if you're following along at home, we're going to be looking at sort of combining chapters 4 and 5. Chapter 4 really, I think, is an extension of what we talked about last time about becoming an expert on your family.
Mm-hmm.
And so chapter 4 really talks about knowing your individual family and tailoring your parenting style for each person in your family. Discipline and how you approach things and the rules you set or such really are for your family and not for anybody else's family. Like, it's not your job to discipline my family or my kids.
Sure.
And so we become experts in our family, like we talked about last time, so that way we can better relate to the kids that we actually have. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of leads into chapter 5, where we talk more about discipline and what happens when rules are broken and what rules we establish and we don't have, because, again, different families – I mean, there are some rules that are probably going to be universal.
Sure. I hope.
I would think so. Yeah. I don't think you're encouraging fighting among your kids.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I mean, there might be that, family out there. It's like, hey, it's fight night.
That's right. This is how we get stronger. We're bringing back the feudal system. We need you to be we're going to see who the strongest representative of our family is going to be. So this is what we're going to do.
Can you imagine your parents just saying, listen, don't fight until Friday. And on Friday... it all comes out.
This is like what was the movie where they let everything go? I'm going crazy.
I don't know movies, so this is
you
all
don't know.
You.
Oh, really? No, saw me? Okay, we're gonna hold on. Give me a second. Oh gosh, because I didn't see it. But the premise of the movie is that there's like one day where everything illegal is legal, and you go get all your
The Purge.
Thank you. Yeah, you don't know movies, see?
But I do know that one.
See, I'm having like an aneurysm right now. I'm having a hard time remembering this. But yeah, so imagine a family operates.
For the record, don't watch that movie.
Probably is a terror. I haven't seen it. But you know.
The concept of it is,
yeah. So, imagine if we had purge rules in our family. Like, once a month, listen, just hold it in, and then once a month for family night, we got a steel cage in the basement, and we're gonna go hash things out.
Since your house actually has a basement, you try this, and then report back to us how it works out for y'all.
We'll do that. Maybe. This is being recorded, so probably not.
I just want to be in the room when you pitch this to Daniel.
I don't. So anyway, going back
to
trying
this.
To find the track again. We got to find the track first.
There's some rules that are universal.
There are. Thank you so much. There are some rules universal, but there are some rules that really do need to vary family to family because all of our kids have different strengths and weaknesses, mm-hmm. things that they are prone to and things that they are not to, that they are less prone to.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. And I think one of the big things as I was reading through this chapter is when we come to our home and see it as with Jesus at the center, this idea of a Christ-centered home, it really does change the way that we discipline our kids. For me, when it comes to the rules that we make, it changes the motivation for those rules. Because so often, at least in my own experience and what is talked about in the chapter, we can parent out of just behavior modification or what I think is right or what I get embarrassed. So I don't want my kids to embarrass me, so now they're going to be in trouble. And if we're not careful, we give punishments that don't fit the crime, so to speak, or we don't really have a goal in mind. And we end up just kind of leaving our kids in this state of they never know what's right, what's wrong, and almost leaving them to walk on eggshells in a way if we don't have a purpose and a good motivation behind our discipline with our kids.
Right. I think that's really a great word, something that Ms. Lowe touched on is that the purpose of discipline is not for the parents.
Yeah.
The goal isn't to make us feel better, like to relieve stress or to express our displeasure in a way that we are made to feel or anything like that. Like the goal of discipline is not necessarily to make our lives easier, although that's a nice side effect.
Sure.
It's a nice side effect. But the goal of discipline is to point the children to Christ and to help them become young adults who will follow Christ and who will live honorable lives and carry the name of Christ with them. So there is an intentionality and a goal with the discipline we're supposed to give to our children. Discipline and disciple, mm-hmm. I mean, they're incredibly similar words for a reason, right? Discipline is a form of discipleship. It's also, I like that she touched on this, very relational because the goal is to point people to Christ. Something you said, you might want to elaborate a little bit on is how it, the goal of discipline is to help the kids not guess where they stand with you. Like there should be a clear, this is what happened. This is why it's happened. And then there should be a resolution. And after the resolution, you should try to mend the fence.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And this isn't something, just so we're clear, that we've thought up or that Julie Lowe, who wrote this book, has thought up. I think there's clear biblical principle here.
Absolutely.
You know, I just have it open with me. Proverbs 22:15 is one of my verses that I really go to in this conversation. And it says, "Foolishness is bound to the heart of a youth or a child, and the rod of discipline will separate it from him." And while that verse can be controversial, I think the principle is very helpful when it comes to that proverb of our kids don't come to us as blank slates.
Right.
They come with a bent towards sin. They come with a rebellious attitude. And as they get older, this notion of bound up or tangled up in a heart, it's almost like that that sinfulness is unbound the older they get, and we see more of it the older our kids get. It's that nice little sweet infant turns into that three-year-old that's terrorizing our home. Mm-hmm. The older they get, the more we see that.
Yeah.
And God has just set it up so that discipline can help them see their own sinfulness, their own foolishness, and we have the opportunity as parents to lead them to Jesus as we discipline. And so when we come at it in that sense, in that attitude of saying, you know what, God in his word has given us the law to expose our hearts and help us to see our own sinfulness. Well, our rules at home ought to do the same thing. It ought to lead our kids to see you've got problems. You have problems and you live under an authority.
Yeah.
And God has made the parents the authority at home, but ultimately we're all under the authority of God. And so as we discipline, we are preparing our kids to see their own sinfulness in hopes that one day they see that you can't fix this. Like, no matter how hard you try, you are never going to make yourself better. And the law teaches us that so that one day we can point them to Jesus in the same way to say, hey, the reason that you are always, you have an issue with your mouth and talking out of turn or with the way you say things is not just because, it's not because you're a bad kid. It's because you're broken. It's because your sin has impacted you and you can't fix this. And we've been trying to teach you this, but ultimately only Jesus can change you. Only Jesus can transform you. And that's where the gospel and this Christ-centered home transforms everything and our motivation for discipline, at least in the way that I've kind of read scripture and developed a concept of this.
No, I agree 100%. You know, we really shouldn't be surprised. You know, we've all had the moment where our kids did something. We're like, where did that come from?
Mm.
It was already there.
Yeah.
It was always there. It was just like, I think the way you said it hasn't blossomed yet. It hasn't bloomed yet. Your man, John Calvin, I think one time said that the cradle is a birthplace of many idols. Our heart is an idol factory. It's all there from birth. We're all part of that. So one of the takeaways from that, if that is the case, and if all of us and we get to experience this with our children firsthand, kind of start off as sinners and then blossom into greater sinners.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our purposes as parents is to discipline them and to teach them the correct way to go and to point them to Christ and to point them to the cross and to lead them in that way. If all that is true, and I believe it 100% is,
sure,
then what that means for our parenting and discipline is that we can't come up with our strategy in the middle of the battle.
Yeah.
We can't be in the heat of the moment. Like we talked about last time, reactive versus proactive parenting. Always taught this to teenagers about dealing with lust. Mm. You can't wait until you're in the situation to know what to do. You have to put some barriers and some fences and you have to have a plan going into the battle if you're going to have any chance of surviving it. And I think that's true of our parenting. I think it's really helpful for us to sit back and think about what our goals have been, even if they haven't been correct, what our goals should be, and what our rules in our family actually are, and are they accomplishing what we want them to accomplish?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, we're just going to kind of react in the moment. When I was a school teacher, I had to set classroom rules. And it was easier to do that than at the home. But I still think the strategy, so I came up with 10. And the last one was always, have fun and do your best, because of course it was, right?
Yeah, that's right. Always.
It's a rule to have fun. If you're not having fun, I'm going to punish you. It's a stupid rule, but it's what it is. And it saved me from having to come up with a 10. And why 10? Because Jesus gave us 10 commandments, right? God gave us 10 commandments. There were like 200 and something others, but you know. Whatever. So
the Christian school kid in me just died a little inside.
Flashbacks, PTSD.
Yes.
I told you we're going to uncover all sorts of scars and trauma in this discussion. But I wanted to, when I set my rules, I set them very intentionally as to how I wanted that classroom to run. And when thinking through the advice I got, which I think is good for us as parents too, is let's not set a rule that we're not actually going to enforce.
Mm. Yeah.
Because if you don't have, if the rule isn't enforceable or you have no intention of enforcing it, then it's not a real rule.
Yeah.
And you don't want to set too many rules because you don't want to over-police and spend your whole time. If you spend all your time trying to enforce rules, then you're not going to be spending the time teaching what you're supposed to be doing. And I think there's some wisdom with this in parenting too. Of course, I wouldn't necessarily limit it to just 9 or 10. There's a bunch of others. But when we establish the rules of our family, we need to make sure that we're consistent.
Mm-hmm.
We need to make sure that it's realistic, that we actually will, can try to be consistent. I mean, of course, we're sinners too. But also that the rules, like you mentioned, are to point kids to Christ or to let our home work in a functional way.
Yeah.
Rather than just a reflex embarrassment kind of a system.
Yeah. Well, and so often our rules just end up being, or our punishment or our discipline ends up just rotating around what's going to keep my kids from being an embarrassment, or what's going to keep our home from being one that society looks at and says, well, that must be a good family. Their kids aren't crazy.
Or what gives you enough peace and quiet so that you can keep your sanity after a day's work.
Exactly. Yeah. 100%. And all of those are just a motivation that's not centered on how does our home bring glory to God. And if we're going to go back to this idea of a Christ-centered home, it's all about living for the glory of God and bringing his good into the world around us. And so our discipline and the rules we make should be with that in mind. And so I think that helps us, and that means that there's no one-size-fit-all. Again, going back to faith over formula, we have to see, okay, God, who are we as a family? Who have you called us to be? How can we glorify you? And what does this look like for us? And I think when we stop and reflect and give some more intentionality there, it can be helpful. Because when we start with the end in mind, it's helpful for us. It helps us because we know I want to develop wisdom in my kids. I want my kids to love the Lord. I want my kids to love me when they're 21 yeah. years old. Because I hope I still love them. And, you know, all of those things.
Did I ever tell you the Vodi Bakum quote?
I don't think so.
The Vodi Bakum was like, is that God made children cute so that we wouldn't kill them, and he made them small so they wouldn't kill us.
That's fantastic. That is a really good quote.
It really is.
And it's so true. But it's right. We cannot forget that end goal. Because when we, again, if we're reflecting God to our kids in the way we parent in every shape and form, that's God's goal from the very beginning. The Bible starts with God with his people in a garden. Sin breaks that relationship, and Jesus can restore that. And the Bible ends in a garden with God with his people. And that is the goal of the Bible, is to bring restoration. And our discipline, our parenting should have that in mind if we're really going to be people who are centered on Jesus.
And that's 100% great. That's 100% correct and great. I do want to make sure that we're staying on the practical side of this too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because if you're listening to this, if you're still listening to this, God bless you. But I don't want you to think like we're encouraging all the rules to be like, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and strength.
Yes.
You shall always, you will give a respectful head nod to your parents, and that's how you will honor the Lord. And not have any basic rules about brushing your teeth or hygiene, or those are not unspiritual things. I think what we're talking about with our perspective is, okay, you brush your teeth because God gave you teeth, and they're going to fall out. You're yes. not going to be able to enjoy the good food that God has given you if you don't have teeth to enjoy it. Deodorant is important because we're supposed to love our neighbors like ourselves, and you need to be around humans, and it is a loving thing to do. So you don't have to spell out with the Jesus juke every single thing.
Yes.
But when we're choosing our rules, some of them you just have to have civil rules mm-hmm. in order to function as a family. But it's because a functioning family brings glory to God.
Yes.
It's because we take care of our bodies and we take care of our relationships, our interpersonal relationships, because that is a God-glorifying thing. But that also does mean that when we not just design our rules but our punishments, that every rule doesn't necessarily have equal weight. Mm. Like dishonoring parents, talking, you know, disrespecting parents or causing harm to siblings should carry a weightier punishment than forgetting to put deodorant on.
Sure.
But wearing deodorant should be a rule.
Yeah. Yeah, a bedtime. You know, that's incredibly helpful. It's if you're going to be able to glorify God and do your best, well, you need to get some sleep.
Yeah.
And so setting bedtimes, those are good. Those are practical. But I like that concept of a rule. The consequence needs to match the action that we are looking at. And so I think those are helpful to think through as we go through this process.
Right. And sometimes the consequence is that you get to show grace and mercy.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the best punishment is when they think they need to be punished and they know they need to be punished and they don't receive the punishment.
Yeah.
You know, the end goal, I'm not saying that, you know, if you play that card too much, then that can get abused.
Yes.
But if the end goal is repentance and contrition, then if they've already got that because the Holy Spirit's working on them and they've known they've blown it and they've known they've wrecked relationship and they're trying to fix it, then that makes it easier for you to show grace because the goal's already been accomplished.
Yeah, and I think that is helpful. You know, one of the things, just to kind of talk about my home a little bit, is we have this goal that our kids can go to a restaurant without tearing the place apart.
That's a nice goal.
It's a nice goal. We don't always hit that goal, but it is a nice goal. And the reason we have that is because we want to be able to connect with people and, you know, invite someone to lunch so we can get to know them better and in a ministry purpose type deal. And you can't do that if your kids are destroying the place. And so that was a goal that we set early on. And again, we don't always hit it. There's times I vividly remember us looking at our kids and saying, "You've been to a restaurant before. You know how to act here. Like, what are you doing?" But those are things or values for us because we want to try and minister that way. And that's just a value in our home. But the purpose was not just so that our kids don't embarrass us as we go out. While that's helpful, the goal was so that we can actually have conversations with people over a meal. Mm-hmm. And that, for us, was a helpful shift, at least to think through and explain to our kids as they've gotten older.
Absolutely. And one thing you said that I do want to kind of reiterate, you said you don't always hit that goal. When we're evaluating our rules and our parenting and how we're handling our discipline, while it's not wrong to look at how children are responding, I think it's important to remember that your children are not going to respond well sometimes. You know, if we chafe under God's discipline sometimes.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that God's done a bad job laying out the rules or giving us the ability to follow the rules or anything. It just means we're sinners and we're still in the process of sanctification.
Mm.
And our kids are the same way too. So you might be like, well, I feel like I'm always fussing at these kids and have all this. Well, you can reevaluate your rules to see are your rules too strict or too harsh? Are your punishments matching them? But it might be that the rules are perfectly fine and the punishment's totally fine. Your kids are just going through a rebellious phase because they're sinners and they need to be repeatedly disciplined. That's on the table too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is a helpful theme because in the book, she also talks about building bridges or connections with our kids. And as they get older, that distance can grow between our kids and us, and that parental authority can really gets challenged by all the other voices that begin to speak into their life. And if we want to be able to maintain an influence as they get older, we have to be aware of this. Of I don't want to be a burden to my kids in the same way I don't want them to be a burden to me. And so as we think through our rules and evaluate those, you know, I believe it's Ephesians 6:4 that talks about parents don't provoke your kids to anger.
Right.
You know, God knows that and knows that that can be a temptation as parents. Mm-hmm. And so he specifically calls that out. And that's helpful for us to know because, again, we want to have that relationship with our kids till the day I die, hopefully.
Yeah.
And so that is a good goal to keep in mind.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So as we kind of wrap this up,
mm-hmm.
did you have more that you want to say?
I don't think so. You had mentioned a while back of that whole idea of building connections. I think we're going to do that today, of how that's just kind of been something you've been thinking through and helpful type process. I don't know. Maybe I'm just throwing this out to midair here.
No, no, we can talk about that now. I think we were going to talk about that next pod, but we can talk.
That's fine.
No, we can talk about
it. We can leave that to next time. See?
Okay, we'll talk about here's a tease.
There you go.
Here's a tease. One of the things that I'm a particular strong believer in because of the relationships is that we need to be proactive in building positive experiences with our kids in organized ways to help us through the discipline time. So that whenever I don't think it's helpful if the only time your kid gets one-on-one time with you is right before they're punished.
Sure.
Right before they're disciplined. And so honestly, she goes in quite a bit more depth in the next chapter about ensuring and enshrining your role as a parent against those competing voices that you just talked about, against peers, against influencers, against things like that. Not that those are necessarily always going to be bad, but you're the parent and you should have the prominent voice in their lives.
Yeah.
And so we need to be proactive in building those relationships to kind of make that happen. So we'll talk a little bit more about how we do that. Not that that's necessarily always the right way, but we'll talk about that more next time.
Yeah, we'll get more practical on that. See, there's a good tease for that
as we go.
As we wrap this one up, then, so we've kind of talked about all these different motivations and how Christ being the center changes how we discipline. I think it would be helpful if we take some time after this episode is over just to reflect on what is our motivation in the rules that we've made, and is there a way that we need to shift so that we're actually meeting the goal that we're hoping to accomplish?
Absolutely, because there is a goal, not just survival.
Yeah, that's
right. This is a beautiful thing that God designed, and we want to give it everything we got.
Yeah.
We're relying on His Spirit, guided by His Word.
That's right. And He is at work in more ways than we know, in the times we fail, in the times we succeed, and we can't miss that. And when we stop and remember that end goal, we can praise God in the sense that He is working, He is active, and He's using you as a parent to bring about His good purposes in the life of the children He's trusted you with.
Absolutely.
So, well, y'all, thank you so much for listening to us and joining us for this conversation. And next time we'll be back, and we look forward to talking with you again. I am Pastor Josh.
I am still Pastor Joe.
And we are so thankful that you joined us. Y'all have a great day.
Bye.